2 hours, depending on the questions. So if you want to jump in, I would do it early. They're starting to pile up pretty quick. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic, press one on your phone. We'll get to you. Let's get started.
Money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and John with me from Pittsburgh Power, and we'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance, engines, performance, fuel mileage, horsepower, torque, modifications, upgrades, troubleshooting, emissions, new technology, you name it, we'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call. We're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. Bruce, John, welcome back, guys.
Boys, it's our pleasure.
Great to have you
Thank
here.
Thank you,
Kevin. I'll see if you guys have anything we want to start with. I'll tell you, we over the weekend, for some reason, I had a ton of maintenance calls, and I had a couple that I was just totally stumped on, and I think we're bringing them back on today. I thought maybe you guys would have some ideas. So one was a Cat C15. He was losing oil pressure, and they pulled the bearings, and he said there was a little bit of copper showing, so they replaced bearings, but the problem didn't change. They did the bottom end and the oil pump, and at 1500 RPM, he'll have 55 or 60 pounds of oil pressure, but as it drops in RPM down to, say, 13, it'll drop to 40, and he said it never used to do that, and Katz looked at it, and nobody seems to have any ideas. So I think we're getting him back. And another was a Series 60, an 06 that's been through 19 injectors in less than 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we have two things to start with.
All right. Go ahead.
Okay. We now have in stock for the N14, the Select and the Select Plus, the full tilt heavy duty exhaust manifold made in the USA. We were having some problems with the N14. The expansion rate wasn't keeping up with the head, so we have that problem worked out. So we now have those in stock. And the other thing I wanted to say was a lot of people think that they'll come by here one time and have multitudes of problems with their truck. And we'll work on it for a day or two or three, and they feel that all the problems should be completely gone. And that doesn't always happen. I mean, when it leaves the dyno and we go for a test drive, and a lot of times it's the owner driving the truck, and they'll come back and say, yep, everything's fine. And a couple of days later, something else will come up, and they get pretty upset because we say, well, you're going to have to bring it back, and let's see what else is going wrong. And that's just a fact of life with these complicated electronic trucks. Sometimes you have to come back more than once. We had a gentleman call us. He had an opportunity to buy a Kenworth that was bought back by Kenworth because it was a company truck. In fact, it was a dad's dog food truck out of Meadville, PA. Kenworth bought it back. And this fella said, hey, I can get a good deal on it. He brought it down, and we worked on it three separate times. The truck is doing phenomenal. What's it getting for fuel mileage, John?
He runs pretty heavy and fast, but I think he's in this high sevens, low eights.
High sevens and low eights,
yeah.
And it's running trouble-free. But it was here three times. Sometimes that is what it's going to take to fix all these problems.
Yeah, it like you said, it's just a fact of life. You know, you try to cover everything you can, and, you know, something just may show up later, and it just, it is what it is. As they get more complicated, you know, there's more of that can go wrong. One other thing that It was interesting. I was reading last week. I actually took an online course on oil sampling the new oils because I wanted to know what kind of differences. The interesting thing they're saying about the new oils is that it's going to be very common until we maybe even start to change some of the thresholds and the levels they flag things at to see very low TBN, see very low base, even though there's nothing wrong with the oil. And they're saying if you see low base on an oil sample with the new oil formulations, check for any other problems. If there's no water, if there's the oxidation and the nitration are okay, they're saying just ignore the low base. It's not an issue. And it was interesting because I just took the course last week, and yesterday I had an oil sample, or Sunday I had an oil sample on an 16 ISX with 50,000 miles on the oil, and the oil looked like, the sample looked like you just poured it out of the bottle. It was so clean. There were no wear metals. There was no soot. There was nothing except the TBN was flagged because it was down to 3. And there was no reason for it whatsoever. So it was a perfect example of the, you know, what they were saying in the course I just went through. So if you see some of these new oils with low base, look at everything else, and if it's fine, don't worry about it.
Interesting. Did they attribute that to just the lower viscosity, is it showing up as the base not being quite as strong?
Yeah, they had some explanations about why it was happening, and they're actually saying the base isn't quite as important as it used to be because of just some of the new settings on the engines and the way they're burning and the way the oil's protecting the engine. I mean, they had a bunch of reasons, but basically just said, we'll probably need to reset the thresholds on base at some point.
Interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. That's a number that I always take it, always keep a close eye on, because that was, to me, always what related to film strength. So that was, you know, that and oxidation were something to keep an eye on for that reason.
Yeah. Yeah, now they said if you see it low, just check oxidation and nitration, and if they're fine and there's no other contaminants, then the base is just fine, the oil's fine, and don't worry about it.
I've got an oil question for you. We've got a truck in the shop right now that's oxidizing the oil rapidly, and I half expected to find a spun bearing or a bad thrust bearing or something in it. And none of the above. He hasn't got a temp gauge, but everything seems to be in order. It's a basic Series 60, nothing pre-emission Series 60, nothing fancy, no high horsepower or anything, but he's rapidly oxidizing the oil. So we checked the rods and mains, and they actually looked great. The cam bearings looked great. I'm struggling to find where it might be. Have you come across this in any of your history?
So was this one sample that had happened, or has it been consistent, something you've been chasing down for a while?
It's been consistent, something he's been worried about for a while. And you know, the oil does, you know, smell like it's been hot. I mean, it doesn't, you know, I think it's something's causing it to heat up, and it's nothing obvious. So I thought maybe in your database of knowledge, you may have come across this before.
You know, the other thing we see normally, like you, we look for heat when we see, you know, high oxidation. But the other thing I found is just a lot of blow-by will do it. And doesn't always have to be in both directions. Like it might not be an engine that's burning a lot of oil, but we might be getting a lot of compression gases down into the... So did you happen to do a pressure check, crankcase?
Not yet, but I that'll be first thing on the list when we're done putting the bearings back in it.
Yeah,
so, yeah, we'll roll that on the dyno and do a manometer test on it.
Yeah, sometimes
oil cooler looks great.
So. Yeah, we'll see just high oxidation just from the oil being constantly in contact with the compression gases.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
All right. Anything else? Or should calls? No, that's all I've got.
Okay. You didn't read up on the plasma stream technology or anything that I sent you the link to?
know what? I have tried about three times to get back to that thing and read it. Time I do, something else pulls me away. So I've got to get to that. It's on my list. One of those things.
Cool. All right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I really want to see that. That looks really interesting. And I'm just so far behind on reading. I'm looking at the clock. We're coming up on a break. So I think what I'll do is I'll take us into the break. We'll come back. I think we have the cat with the oil pressure issue question first. So we'll get to that one right after this. See if you guys have any ideas. And we'll get to lots more of your calls and questions. Don't go away. Check out the website. It's letstruck.com. Always something new and exciting going on over there. You heard me over the weekend. Larry Wingett's book was just released yesterday. We've got a link to it up on our site. Great book. Check that one out. We'll be right back. We'll get to your calls and questions. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rothenberg. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Bruce and John are with me here from Pittsburgh Power, and we're going to get to your calls. We're going to start off north of the border. Willie, welcome to the program.
Hi there. So this is a C15 Acer Cat MSX. I like what Kevin was saying, I'm losing oil pressure as soon as I start building boost. And my RPMs dropped down to 1,300. So the bottom, the main bearings with the crank rod bearings been changed, oil pump's been changed, and the cooler's been changed. And the only thing, we checked the top, the BVAs, the oil pressure in them. There's no leaks in there. Only thing left to check is what they can recommend is saying the oil basin where the filter screws on, the check valve's in there. But they say it's highly unlikely. So,
well, there are check valves in there for whenever you do a cold start. A lot of times, yep, the oil bypasses the full flow filter, so you do want to look into that. And you also want to check the Jake brake housings because oil flows through there, and if one of them is cracked badly, it will dump oil overboard.
Yeah, that's been checked already.
Okay.
How about the pump and the relief valve?
The pump was changed.
Okay.
So
same oil pressure with either pump?
Yes.
Okay.
Because we did it all in one.
I'm not as familiar with that engine as Bruce, but what about cooling nozzles? The cats are failures there.
Yeah. You could have a broken piston cooling nozzle,
right,
and you'll lose some oil pressure there. And
okay,
you also score a piston if you have one that's broken. You can either pull them out from the side of the block, or you can pull the pan down and look up from the bottom. Hopefully, the mechanic did look at that whenever he was putting the oil pump in.
Yeah, good. I'm thinking they would have looked at that, but I can double check that.
Yeah,
I know that's common with the Cummins, but I'm not sure the cats have a similar issue.
Well, they have, there's bend.
They bend?
Caterpillars will bend sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying they can't break off.
Okay, what's like, for safe operating oil pressure, like, in what range should I be? Like, if I'm dropping down to 40, well, I mean, I usually don't let it drop down past 50. I'll just downshift, drop a gear. Am I still safe to run her down the road, or is this something that is critical?
I think you're okay, because in 1982, when Cummins went to the Big Cam 2, they lowered oil pressure from 55 and 60 down to 40. And I think I used to race Corvettes with a guy that was with Mobil Oil. And I think he said that high oil pressure actually will wash out a bearing and you get better lubrication at lower oil pressures. And I've seen engines idle on 5 pounds, 12 V71 Detroits. I know they don't use them in trucks anymore, but they'll idle along at 7, 8, 9 pounds. So I think you're okay at 40 some pounds.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Cause on idle, all depends on where my temperature is sitting at, but she'll drop sometimes down to about 27 pounds on idle, but most of the time it's about 30.
Yeah, that doesn't sound too bad to me at all.
No.
Do you have any issues with any IVA codes, or do you have, is the Jake working fine still?
Yep. Everything's working fine.
Okay, that's all good. Terrific. Okay.
So,
were you there when they had the valve cover off and the engine running and looking inside?
No, I was not. So I'm just going by what the mechanic's telling me. So
I really think you might want to pull the valve cover and let the engine idle and be looking for excessive oil flow out of the Jake's somewhere.
I'll tell you where to look. Where the Jake's bolt down, there was an update. This is something I've seen in the past 2 years, at least three or four of them come through here. The Jake housing was machined, the relief where the hold-down bolt holds the housing down.
Yep.
They originally were made with a sharp edge there, which is a stress riser, which is where the crack will propagate. So if you want to see where the oil is coming from, if one of those is cracked, you're going to see oil flowing around one of the hold-down bolts. And you'll see that relief where it's machined in will have a sharp edge at the base of it, as if they use the square tip end mill to make the machining. And the newer ones, the update, you'll see a rounded edge in there, which is not a stress riser, which means it won't be as prone to crack right there. So the place to look when you pop the valve covers up and start it, look right at the hold down bolts. And if they've been updated, you'll see a nice round chamfer around that, where the relief is, where the hold down nut is. And they'll usually not leak. But if you've got the ones with square edges, it's hard to see because oil puddles there anyway. But you'll watch one of the puddles continually grow, or you'll see it roll out of there. So keep an eye on that. And if it gets worse, if you get to the point where you're losing pressure at the top of the engine there, the first thing that's going to happen is you're going to get an IVA code. So you'll have quite often IVA codes are fixed by changing the Jake housings to the newer ones that have the chamfered edge there.
Okay. All righty then. I'll give that a whirl.
All right. Thanks.
Let's head off to Massachusetts. Daniel, welcome to the program.
And how y'all doing today?
Good. What's on
your
mind?
How are you?
I have an oil sample. It's the first oil sample that I have for this truck since I put the bypass filter on it. So this is one full round on a filter.
Got it. So I'm looking at the sample showing the truck has 54,000 miles on it. Is that correct?
At the time of the sample, that was correct.
54,000 miles on, it says a Series 60, so I'm assuming on an in-frame.
It's a glider.
Okay. All right. So this would be after an in-frame and about 16,000 on the oil itself. Looks really clean. I mean, there's a little bit of fuel dilution, but way under the threshold. Viscosity looks good. There's soot is at 0.6. Base is way high on this one. We're still at almost 8 on the base. Wear metals are all low. Little bit of silicon, a little higher than normal, but that would be, you know, pretty common after the in-frame. there's really nothing on here to talk about. It's a good clean sample. Looks like it's tuned well and breaking in really well.
They flagged the magnesium as a little low.
Yeah, magnesium is an additive metal. So we just ignore them because you can take two bottles of oil and sample them and you'll get different additives out of the same exact oil, just from bottles. So we never even pay any attention to additives at all.
All right. Now, the reason I kind of wanted to go over this one is because since the engine is still breaking in, I was wondering if I'd still be, because the oil looked dirty. I mean, it just didn't look nice. And when I took the sample out, it's quite dark, and you're saying that the oil's still pretty clean. Would I be safe to go to change out all the filters between the full flow and the bypass and go like another 15,000?
Oh, you'd be fine.
With the way
The Series 60 is notorious for just looking dirty. The oil just looks dirty when they're running right, when everything's fine. You change the oil 1,000 miles later, it looks dirty again. It's just, they're known for that. That's why we sample, and the sample's just fine.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure, because I'd like to get this engine to go, you know, a couple million miles without having to have any major work done to the inside. You know, that's the goal. But, you know, things happen.
Yeah. So. Yeah. As far as the sample, though, it looks just fine. I wouldn't worry about it at all. Speaking of looking at things, I'm looking at the clock, and it looks like we're heading into second break. I'll take us through the break. We'll come right back and get to more of your calls and questions. So stick around. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and John with me from Pittsburgh Power. We're going to take your calls and answer more of your questions right after this. Check out the website. It's letstruck.com. If you want to join us on the recordings here during the week, we record shows every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. It's 1 o'clock Eastern time. You can find all the details, the times, the shows, the phone numbers to call in are on the website, letstruck.com. You can also text the word listen to 99,000 if you're in the U.S., or text the word listen to 76,000 if you are in Canada. And then every time we're doing a recording, a podcast, a special episode, we will send a text message out to you about 20 minutes early with the phone number and the time and the show. And you'll always know when we're recording. You can join us. It's always easier to get through and ask your questions on a recorded show. So if you've been trying and you can't get in on the regular show, which is pretty common, recorded shows are a little easier. We're going to get to a break. We'll be right back with more stuff. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Bruce and John are here with me, and we're going to get right back to the calls. Let's go to Indiana. Rod, welcome to the program.
Hi. Hey, I want to talk about fuel, the fuel that comes out of the pump, you know, into our tanks. The biofuels, now, does that create more soot? And what is the biofuel? What's it made out of? Is it an oil base? Is it alcohol? Is it? I mean, I don't understand what's going on there. It's harder and harder to find number two fuel at the pumps. And my truck seems to run better on it.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the biofuels, mostly because from what I've been able to gather from the research I've done, you don't know what it's being from. You know, regular number two, it's really pretty consistent because it all comes from the same source, comes out of the ground just like it has been for a long time. You may find different active packages. Biofuel, though, they're making it from corn. They're making something called biomass fuel. I've seen algae. Over the years, I've seen them say they can make biofuels out of almost anything. And I think because of that, we don't get a lot of consistency. So I'm not a big fan of them, but I'm not sure what we're going to do because, like you say, it's getting harder and harder to find just straight number two diesel.
Yeah, well, I was in.
Go ahead.
I was in Iowa this past week,
I'm
and
just
they
wondering
actually
what the heck.
They actually had it
made
labeled.
Out of.
All right, I'll jump in, and then John, you go next. I like I was saying earlier, I don't know that you're always going to know what it's made out of. I mean, corn is common, but they can make biofuel and biomass fuels out of a lot of different stuff. John?
15, 119.
Yeah, the I was in Iowa this past weekend, and they actually had it labeled at the pumps that it was made from soy. It was soy. It was a 15% bio. So I assume the other 85% is number two. But it was all, you know, every pump had 15%, and it was proudly said Iowa soy. So it's soybean oil that they're using to mix with the fuel for a B15, they were calling it. It was interesting at the station right near the track where I was, had a big sign up, and they advertised heavily at the event I was at as well. It was interesting.
Yeah, I'm just not a big fan of these. And, you know, we've been told, though, it's, you know, good for the environment. It's a good alternative fuel because we're going to run out of petroleum. And it's really highly politicized because the corn is so heavily subsidized in this country that it's just dirt cheap. So we grow corn everywhere. And if there were no government subsidies, corn would lose money. It sells on the market most of the time for less than the cost of just producing it. No profit whatsoever. It would be, you would lose money on every bushel of corn, but the subsidy makes it profitable no matter what. So what we've done is we've just encouraged these companies to just plant and grow corn everywhere because it's a guaranteed profit. So what they had to start doing, or what made sense to do, was just finding something to do with all this corn. Because the more they grow, the more money.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. The commodity price of it is not my question right now.
He just wants to know what's in it.
What the heck, when they add it to the fuel, the diesel fuel, what the heck is it? Is it alcohol? Is there alcohol in there like they used to put ethanol in gas for gas engines?
No,
I know
no,
this is corrosive, very corrosive. Or is it mandated to be oil-based? I mean, what the heck is it, and what does it do to this exhaust after treatment? My sensors
and all that. It's some sort of a vegetable oil, is what it is. It's a vegetable oil.
Right.
So it's not alcohol. Okay. It'll be a vegetable oil. Yeah, of some sort.
Now, what's it doing to the exhaust after treatment sensors?
I don't know that it actually burns dirtier or cleaner. I don't have enough experience with it to see that, and I've not spent much time with it.
That's the point that I was wondering.
Right.
Does it make more soot, or what does it do? Does it gum up more?
Well,
okay.
Well, that's kind of what I was trying to get to. I don't know if we're ever going to know. We're not anytime soon because there's no consistency in what it's made from and how it's made. And I would think that when you're
talking about, you got that right. I track my mileage and I can tell the difference, like bang. I know what's going on. I know when it's bad and when it's okay.
You know, I would think in something as sensitive as these sophisticated engines, there's going to be a difference between a fuel that's made from soy and one that's made from corn and one that's made from algae. And so I don't know that we're, and then it's blended. Then there's going to be different additive packages. I don't know that we'll ever really know if these things are helping or hurting. When the, you know, when the original biofuels started coming out, there did seem to be this clean out that actually happened. Like the stuff would literally take some of the fuel varnishes off the tanks and off the lines, and it would clog filters early on. And then as more and more trucks were using it more consistently, we weren't seeing that anymore. I don't know what was so, you know, cleansing about it. It almost worked like a detergent, it seemed like, in the beginning. We don't seem to hear much about that anymore, but I just haven't seen any real consistency with these fuels.
Yeah, I wish I had more experience to talk about it. I'm actually looking up online right now to see what the energy content is compared to diesel. And it'll depend on which one it is, because I'm sure that, you know, soy oil probably makes a different amount of energy than does the corn.
From what I remember, unless they've gotten better and better at this, and they may, there was significantly less energy in most of the biofuels. The early reports we got were so inconsistent, though. Some people were saying, oh my God, I get better fuel economy when I put it in. Other people were saying, no, my fuel economy is awful. Some people, but it was all subjective. I mean, we didn't have enough really good hard data to tell. But the research that I did, and this was probably 4 or 5 years ago, the energy content was less. The more biofuel they put in, if it was a 5-95 blend, it was only a little less. If they were doing an 80-20, it was enough that you probably could have seen a fuel mileage difference.
Right.
Really, though, and I know he didn't want to hear the political side or the commodity pricing, but that's really the issue. If these crops weren't being subsidized, we wouldn't even have these fuels. They're too expensive to produce. There's no savings to the environment. When you think about the fact that we have to plant the corn and think of all the emissions that go into just planting the corn, all the trucking materials back and forth, all the tractors out in the field, all that stuff. Now we have to go harvest the corn. Now think of all the emissions we're burning through to harvest the corn. Now we have to take the corn and move it to a plant to process it into biofuel. We have all the transportation emissions. We have all the factory emissions. How are we doing anything good for the environment by producing these biofuels?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's to get those farmers doing something. We were paying them to not farm, or to pay them to do something instead. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So here, I've looked it up. So B100, if it were 100%, has 93% of the energy of number two diesel. So there's a 7% loss.
Yeah.
So the energy content of number two diesel is 128,488 BTUs per gallon. And the energy of a gallon of bio B100 is 119,550 BTUs per gallon. So there's some info for you. So it is slightly less in energy, which means there your mileage will go down because you're going to have to burn more pounds of it to create the same amount of energy.
There you go. Just physics.
Yep.
All right.
It's all math. That's
right. Let's head off to Virginia. Les, welcome to the program.
Oh, boy, this is an interesting day today. Okay, you know how you're always talking you need to think about replacing your fuel lines at about 750,000, about 700,000 miles?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I got to replace mine at 751 after my high-pressure pump disintegrated. And it sent shrapnel all the way through the fuel system up to the, you know, $12,000 worth of repairs. Is that normal?
Hold that thought, and we'll get to a break, and we'll come right back and answer that question and many more. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. All right, we're heading into the fourth segment. I'm looking at the board, and it looks like we have plenty of questions. We're going to come back into a second hour after this. So, boy, here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and John with me from Pittsburgh Power. We're down to the final segment, so we're going to get right back to the phone calls. We were talking with Les in Virginia. So, Les, go ahead.
Okay. I was in New Mexico, and truck lost power, got pulled into the dealership, and turns out that my high-pressure fuel pump decided to disintegrate at 751,000 miles. First question is, they said it sent shrapnel all the way through the fuel system up to the injectors, and so they replaced basically everything between the pump and the injectors. And second question is there a database of when catastrophic failures like this could be expected so we could maybe do, you know, maybe do something ahead of time instead of reacting to it?
There, I'll jump in and answer the question about the database, and then, oh, I got to bring Bruce and John back on. I forgot to hit their button. Sorry, guys, I'll turn this over to you for the mechanical part of this in a second. There are numbers on almost every part on that engine, what they call half-life, which is kind of a weird way of doing it, but it will give you an idea. They track the average life of all of those parts. I worked with a company that had a database, and they were building a maintenance program for heavy trucks where they would recommend replacing parts before their failure time. I found that it actually led to higher maintenance costs. Because, again, averages to me are just such a lousy way of doing anything. You know, you take two numbers. We have, you know, something happens. I'm just going to use a really generic example. Something happens at 100 and something happens at 1, and we average them, and you get about 50 as your average number, but it's completely irrelevant to both cases. 50 is way too low in the case of 100, and it's way too high in the case of 1. It's a meaningless number, and you can have that in any average. You could have a split where a lot of things fail at this number and a lot fail at this number and none in the middle, but your average is going to be right in the middle, and it's very misleading. So I was part of a program that was being developed to and it kind of modeled the airline model because they do that. But they have a much bigger reason than just cost. You know, they don't want planes falling out of the sky. I'm kind of with them on that one. But when I looked at the program and they wanted me to be a part of it, the more I looked at it, the more I saw it just really increased cost. And it wasn't lowering downtime. It wasn't really saving any money. So, John, any experience with stuff like that?
In racing, we do with everything. I've got a, you know, with the cars that would run, we have an Excel spreadsheet on every part that goes on it, and we track mileage. Some things we track heat cycles on even. So that's more like the aircraft. But we don't have the variables. You know, in racing, the thing's just driven flat out all the time. So a thing like a truck would be really difficult to do that with because there's the human interface. So you've got a guy in there who operates the pedals and the levers a little differently than the other guy, and or you've got a different route that you run, or, you know, it's really almost impossible with the number of variables that lead to this. So that would I couldn't imagine that being effective with in the trucking industry.
Kevin, that was you have to also think about some people are hard on the throttle. They mash into the throttle. They lift their foot up fast. Other people, the more seasoned drivers, will ease in, ease out, shift easy. an item such as turbochargers. A turbocharger will run for an easy driver well over 1,000,000 miles. For a hard driver, it'll fail at 600,000 or 700,000. That's prior to the variable geometry turbo. That's like one on a DDEC 4 or a 6NZ or a 5EK CAT. But so a lot has to do with when a part gets replaced with that driver's right foot.
Les, does that help?
Back to Les's failure. Is your truck have an ISX in it?
No, it's a DD15.
Excuse me?
It's a DD15.
DD15, okay. Well, I've not heard of a fuel pump failure on one of those yet. That's interesting. The high pressure pump went.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So
I've seen the ISXs have ceramic pistons in their high pressure pump, or a certain vintage of them did. They've replaced them since with steel. But the ceramic pistons would actually crack and come apart and go through the fuel system. But I think that's a rare occasion on your DD15.
All right, we're going to head off to Arizona. Jesse, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing? Hey, guys. I just have a quick question. Real quick, I'm in the market of buying a truck, California legal, and I just need to know which of the trucks is the better, less trouble, easier to fix. I'm looking in between 2010 and 2014. I just want your thoughts about that.
Let me ask you a couple questions. Is, as of this date, what is your favorite engine and what is your favorite truck of all the trucks you've owned?
Okay, I like a Freightliner with a 60 series, the older versions, but I'm trying to get into a California legal, and pretty soon they're going to be 2010 and newer. So that's what I was looking at.
To me, if you're a Freightliner fan, then you go with a Freightliner with a DD15. If you're DD15? A Kenworth Peterbilt fan, you go with an ISX. So you have to make that decision and pick the truck of your choice. And then
I also heard this weekend on the show that one truck that of the 19 injectors, and it kind of sounds like a nightmare to me. So I was just wondering, I wanted to take your take on what it's the easiest for you guys to fix, because that's, you know, then I could probably make my decision out of that.
You live in California?
I live in California.
Do you run east?
I do run east.
Okay. I was going to say, because if you just run up and down the I-5 corridor, we can't help you anyway.
Yeah, I run all 48. I choose where to go, but I've been all over.
Okay. Well, I think you need to pick the truck that you like, and if you like the Freightliner, go with the Freightliner. To me, okay. I'd be looking for a T660 with an ISX. It would be my choice, but...
Okay.
I'll differ from that slightly. I don't think you could go wrong with a Cascadia with a DD15 in it. And you could get that with the really, really low gears. And that truck's just a moneymaker, I think. If I personally were buying a truck, I'd probably get the Western Star version. The new Aero-looking Western Star is just a terrific-looking truck and nicely built. If you're looking for something slightly used, I really don't think you'd go wrong with a Cascadia with a DD15 in it.
So what year? Because I heard, you know, this is what I hear outside, but that's why I call you guys the experts. What year is the one that has the least problems?
I would go 14 and up, as new as you can afford, because they seem to have made progress with these systems every year. So
that's
going to depend
what I
on
to
your
hear.
Budget. So I would just go newer, because they've managed to simplify the systems. The newer DD15's gotten rid of that turbo compounder and some of the other complicated things that were on it. So I would say as new as possible in either case. I mean, if you were going to go with the Cummins, same story. The new Cummins has even gotten rid of the seventh injector. They've figured out a way to hang the number 3 and 4 injector open over during overlap and push some fuel into the exhaust for regen so they don't have a separate injector hanging off the side. So basically what's gone on is their systems are getting simpler and cleaner every year. So, you know, as new as you can afford would be my recommendation there.
Okay, I understand. Thank you very much, and you guys have a great day.
You're welcome.
Right.
Thanks. All right, bye-bye.
Looks like we're just about ready to wrap this one up. Not enough time for another call. Anything you guys want to close with?
Nope. No, let's roll into the next one.
All right, let's do that. We're going to wrap this one up. We got to a bunch of calls and questions. We'll do it again. Be sure to join us. If you want to see the recording schedule so you could join us on the recorded hours, you can find that on the website. Lots of other stuff on the website as well. We're always updating things and adding new stuff. So check it out. It's at letstruck.com. Thanks to the guys, Bruce and John from Pittsburgh Power. We'll do it again. This has been the Power Hour. Kevin Rutherford, be safe, be profitable, fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get started on a second hour here. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is the Power Hour. We're going to get to your calls and questions. I've got Bruce and John with me from Pittsburgh Power. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance, engines, performance, horsepower, torque, fuel mileage, upgrades, modifications, troubleshooting, electronics, emissions, new technology, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call. Bruce and John are with me. And guys, I think we should probably just get right to some calls today because we have a bunch of them.
Kevin, I want to say one thing.
Sure.
One thing. I just got a phone call. When you're pulling a grade, especially when it's really cold or really hot outside, and if it's really humid, you're pulling a grade and you keep rolling into the throttle and you see the boost go up, coolant temperature go up, exhaust temp go up, but your speed stays the same. What's the message? Message is it's not going to do any more. So ease back out of the throttle, let the boost come down, let the temperatures come down. And actually, let it come down to 1 or 2 mile per hour because now you're taking it out of the lug mode. But some people think they have enough power. It should constantly always accelerate. And that is not the case.
You know, it's interesting, Bruce. I had a statistic somewhere a long time ago, and I can't find it. But they did some numbers on traveling from the East Coast to the West Coast on several different interstates, like 40, 70, 80, 90, you know, making the entire trip from one coast to the other. And we're looking at is when you were on the level and when you were actually climbing or going down, and they averaged some of them out. And it came out to the fact that you were on the level about 90% of the time. So even though it feels like we're always fighting a hill, we're always pulling something, it's not that much of the time that you're doing it. And if you think about the distance from the bottom of the hill to the top and the time saved by just going, say, 3 or 4 miles an hour faster, it's hardly even measured in minutes. I mean, sometimes we're talking about you're only going to get to the top of the hill seconds faster. And you're, the way you just described it, you're working the hell out of the truck to make up a minute or two. It's just not worth it. Just back out and leave a little bit and ease your way over the top of the hill.
You know, a lot of people run north and south through the central states. And if you're running against the flow of the Mississippi River, you're actually going uphill slightly. And you'll notice that you can't go 2, 3, or 4, or 8 pounds of boost. It might take 14 or 15 pounds of turbo boost. But if you turn around with the same load and go the opposite way, go with the flow of that river and all rivers and creeks, you'll see that you might be able to maintain that same speed at 5, 6, 7, 8 pounds of boost. So you always have to think about the lay of the land and which way the water is flowing.
There you go. All right, let's get to some phone calls. Let's start off in Virginia. Keith, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Kevin, Bruce. I've got a brand new owner-operator, and my first week out in this truck is only getting in the fours. Granted, I'll tell you where I've been running, and I'm sure Bruce will understand these roads. Route 22 through Pennsylvania, Interstate 68, and we've been running 75,000 plus, but this truck is getting fours, and I'm hoping you can give me some pointers to tell me how to get this truck at least to five so we can go from there with some improvements that we can afford to do.
All right. What you're running 22 and 68. 68 is the hardest interstate in the United States, by the way, from Morgantown over to Hagerstown.
Yeah.
So that's a tough one. Are you running it with your foot flat on the floor when you're climbing those steep hills?
No, and get to that point where I'd have to do that, drop one more gear, and just let it walk.
Okay, that's good. And what engine do you have?
I've got a 2004 ISX running about 435 horse.
But give us the rest of the specs. What model truck?
What's that?
Give us some of the other specs.
It's 10-speed, 273 rears, 22.5. It's International, 9200, pulling flatbed.
Yeah, nothing about this setup says fuel mileage. We don't really have good aerodynamics. They're not the worst on the road, but they're not great. The 10-speed, the 273s, and an 04 ISX with low horsepower, I think you're just really, really struggling with that kind of weight and those pulls. I think what you need to focus on is performance. I think you've got to get that horsepower up. You've got to get that thing burning clean. I mean, there can be a lot of issues with an 04 ISX that just got to get it back to good operating condition before you can think about upgrades. But your upgrades should all be around performance right now.
Yeah.
Where's home for you?
Home is upstate New York, right along the Canadian border.
I think you ought to make an appointment and get that in here, and let's look at a few things. If you're going to continue to run 22 and 68. I mean, you're picking two of the hardest roads there are.
Yeah.
22 is actually drastically improved in the last 48 years. When I was 19 years old, we used to send our trucks over 22, and They were NH250s and 318s, and it took forever to get those guys across there. But
yeah. But it's still still a hard road.
Yeah. Having a 10-speed on a road like that, 10-speeds to me are just for level terrain. You should even put a 13 or an 18 in it. And let's get the horsepower up to 600 and some horsepower and go from there and let the truck run a little bit easier. Does it have a turbo boost gauge in it?
No, it does not. And I'm thinking probably one of my first purchases is going to be a scan gauge so I can get those kind of numbers.
All right, let's get the scan gauge and a boost gauge in there and an exhaust gas temperature gauge and go from there. Let's download the ECM. We'll have our engineering department download it, and we'll talk about what the truck's going through as you're running these two highways.
Yeah, this one needs some performance upgrades. It's not spec'd for fuel economy. It's certainly not spec'd well for doing what you're doing with it. But the good news is there's a lot you guys could do over there to improve that fuel economy. My guess would be that, you know, with a couple good performance upgrades, a good tune, you know, clean out the emissions, this could easily be a 6 mile per gallon truck doing this. And that change from fours to sixes, the dollar amount savings is huge. I mean, it'd be well over $10,000 a year in savings to get it up to six. So let's go to Illinois. Mark, welcome to the program.
How are you doing today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I've got a 2012 pack car. We've talked about it before. And my engine, it's a good engine, good truck, but it's starting to get like me. It's starting to just have problems getting up to speed. You know, when I come off the line, come off a light, it seems like it's taking longer and longer for it to get up to speed. Now, normally, when it hits 1600, the engine evens out. It forces me to change gears. I know it's a fuel saving thing, but it just seems like even when I'm like on the turnpike or something like that, and I start rolling, taking longer to get up to 60, 65 miles an hour. And I'm haven't had any problems with it. It seems to be running well. I'm just curious, is something up? Does it need a retune? Does it need Geritol or something?
Well, hold that thought. We'll come back and we'll let John and Bruce tackle that one right after this break. We'll get to more of your calls and questions as well. Stick around. Be right back. This is the Power Hour. I'm Kevin Rothenberg.
I'm going to ask him about his turbo boost. This truck probably.
I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and John with me from Pittsburgh Power. We're going to go back to Mark in Illinois. So, Bruce, go ahead. I think you had some questions for him.
Mark, do you have a turbo boost gauge in this truck?
I have a scan gauge, and I always keep one of the readings on boost.
Okay. Does it build boost as fast as it normally does with the rate at which you roll into the throttle, or is that slower too?
Be honest with you, I haven't noticed.
Okay, you should always you should always, as you're riding along, and let's say you're riding along in your 10-pound of boost and you roll into the throttle a half inch, and normally let's say it would go up to 22 or 25 pounds of boost, and it should do that instantly. And as you're driving a truck, you want to know that. You want to know, is it building boost as fast as it normally does? Can I just roll into it? And I'm not talking about mashing it to the floor. I'm talking about just giving it like a half inch and seeing where the gauge goes to. And that way you'll know as fuel filters start to get dirty, fuel lines start to clog, DPFs or mufflers start to clog. But John and I were talking during the break, and we think you need to bring it in and get a good emissions tune-up done on that. The DPF probably needs a forced regen, and we need to clean out the intake and get all the soot and things out of there. John, do you want to add something to it?
That was my first thought. Yeah, an after-treatment maintenance would be ideal. It may not be setting a code, and it may not allow you to do a full forced regen, parked regen. I'm not sure if you've done one of those recently or not. But the flow could be down on the DPF. There's a window there, and if you're at the top of that window rather than the bottom, or so to the bottom flow-wise rather than the top, it'll definitely affect performance. The truck just won't be breathing like it should. And it's not necessarily going to set a code, so it's not going to tell you that it needs that.
Well, one thing I have noticed is that when I'm not one to, you know, step on the gas and rabbit start, you know, my truck from the line. I try to roll into it pretty smooth. I try to keep, you know, my shifting pretty even and what have you. But I'm just noticing that even when I'm accelerating, it just seems like, it feels like it's just lagging behind a little bit. You know?
Are you driving the truck right now?
Yes.
Okay, and how many pound of boost are you using right now on the scan gauge?
26, but I'm going up a little bit of a grade.
So you're going up a grade, okay. So will you be on the level in a little bit here?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm going to come up to a level area. I while we were talking and when I was during the break, I noticed that on a level area, it's running about between 10 and 12.
10 and 12 on the boost.
On the boost right now.
Okay. Are you at that point yet?
Yeah, I'm there. I'm running at
8.5. All right, so just take roll into the throttle, you know, give it like half throttle and tell me how fast the boost goes up to and what it goes up to.
Okay. Up to 24, pretty quick.
Okay. Well,
it's spooling.
That's good news. That's good news.
Yeah.
Because if you could see it and you say, all right, I'm at 8.5, I'm at 10, 11, 12, and then you say, uh-oh, we've got some fuel restrictions or air restrictions here.
Yeah, no, it went from like 11, 12, up, jumped to 24.
Okay,
you know,
that's
it
good.
It went right in there. So,
well, that may lead me to believe that you've got some sort of driveline inefficiency somewhere. Make sure it's, does it feel like it's dragging and anchored? Is it possible that you've got a wheel bearing or the truck is somehow misaligned now? You know, if the axles aren't quite pointed all straight, you could create a whole lot of resistance.
I guess it kind of depends on what I'm hauling. I don't normally haul pretty heavy stuff. But yeah, there are some times it feels like I'm pulling the trailer, like I'm dragging the trailer with me.
Right.
I haven't noticed any unusual tire wear, any unusual noises coming from the driveline.
Right. Get out and feel each wheel bearing at some point when you stop. Just walk around the truck and touch each hub, and you know they'll be a little hot. Be careful at first, but see that they make sure they all feel the same.
Okay.
Okay. I think you ought to get in here and let's do an MD alignment and do an emissions tune-up on that.
I know. I keep trying to get down to see Chad, but you know I just can't get down there to see him. And yeah, I need to come in and see you guys. I know I do.
Your subconscious mind's telling you there's something wrong, and your subconscious mind is always right.
There you go. Let's head off to California. Greg, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. Kevin, I got an engine I think that's on a death spiral. It. I apologize. I should have given you my account number from OPS. I've been very inconsistent with the oil samples, by the way. Would you like to have that number?
Now let's go ahead and see what kind of issues we have, okay. And then if I'll have Bridget look up
okay.
the oil sample.
I basically ended up having my oil changed over in Tennessee. That's where the real problem started. I didn't have an engine that was burning very much oil at all. As a matter of fact, it was like the fuel dilution that I was receiving was keeping my engine crankcase full. I had my oil changed over in Tennessee, and they put a blended synthetic oil in it. And boy, oh boy, I've had nothing but issues after that. We started burning nothing but oil, and I've changed my oil a bunch of times, and the problem is consistent. I'm burning way too much oil. And I'm wondering
what engine
about,
do you have?
I got a Series 60.
What year?
It's a D-Deck 6. It's in an 09 Freightliner.
Okay.
I think I've got a lot of carbon built up, and I was wondering about running some sort of a cleaner through there and whether you guys would suggest that.
Well, I know Cummins has a cleaner that will eat carbon, takes a carbon right off the tip of the injectors, and it'll clean the top of the piston down to the top ring. It comes in a box, but it's a plastic gallon inside the box, and you hook it up to your suction and your return, and you run the truck at 1,200 RPM for about 45 minutes till it goes through this gallon. But I've never tried it on a Detroit. There was no reason why it wouldn't work. Carbon's carbon.
Have you ever heard of the BG products or Marble Mystery Oil or Seafoam?
Very familiar with most of those. BG is a great company, makes good products. The machines that BG uses to do power steering, automatic transmissions are made by the same company that makes our engine flush system. And that's something you could think of doing, getting in here and let's do an engine flush to eat the carbon out of it.
That's exactly where I was going to go with it. In other words, I had been considering the BG product specifically, yeah. Although I got to tell you, I've been considering the Marble Mystery Oil as well. In other words, an oil additive. I've been running Lucas injector cleaner. I don't know if it does it any better or.
I'd stay with the Lucas injector cleaner, but okay. Let's think about this running a gallon of this Cummins. I don't know what to call it, but it was developed back in the days of the 444 when they came out with the step injector. And before we would set an overhead, we had to run this flush through it. So we took a truck that we knew the injector tips on a big cam were really carboned up. The engine, the overhead was run loose. We run this gallon through it, and then we pulled the injectors out and took them apart. And I got to tell you, they were spotless. There was absolutely no carbon left on them. So if it's eating carbon there, it's going to eat carbon off the piston and down to the top ring. And you don't want that carbon to be in there. The carbon can actually take the crosshatch off your cylinder walls, and then you burn oil. But we could run a gallon of that through and then do the engine flush treatment to it.
I was saying that you would do both.
I would
do
both.
Because one's treating the injectors, the other one's treating the oil.
One's treating the injectors and the carbon in the combustion chamber, and the other
right.
one is treating the rest of the dirt in the engine.
My concern with the injector cleaner would be the DPF. Because this has got a DPF on it now.
Ah, good point. This stuff was developed back in the... late 90s before DPF. So maybe what we would do would be disconnect the exhaust pipe prior to going into the DPF.
We've got to get to a break. We'll be right back with more of your calls and questions right after this. Stick around.
You didn't actually drive it with that stuff. You just ran it in the shop, right? Yeah.
Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Today is the Power Hour. Got Bruce and John with me from Pittsburgh Power, and we're going to get back to your calls and questions. We are off to California. Al, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was going to ask about there was a while back John, I believe, mentioned, or Bruce mentioned about maybe in the future you'll be able to see what's going on with our engine as we're going down the road. Like, say, if I got a check engine light or whatever, I can give you guys a call, and somehow you guys could tap in. I want to answer that. And then another question is, can you explain how EGR engines get the oil more dirty? And so if you could explain how that process works. I just wanted to comment on the guy that was calling about the injector pumping out, and then for the new guy, what I did, I got the 2014 T680 with an I6 comes. Oh, by the way, John, I'm waiting on Dorothy. I'm on my way. I live in Southern Cal. I'm on my way to Washington, and from there I'm heading east. So I'll see you sometime in about a week and a half or so for Dorothy. I called you a while back, and you told me I had asked you around the 17th. It was okay. So I'll be there a little later than that, but. That way, okay. And then some other
we've got you on the schedule already, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I call. But I'm going to have to call in. I'm not going to be able to make it on the 17th. On the 17th, I'm going to be in Ohio. And so from there, I'll work my way over here. So it'll be maybe later at the end of the week or the following week. But I want to call after the show and reschedule. So anybody buying a truck, Kevin, I talked to you a few times. I'm the guy that used to be a service advisor a long time ago before I got into trucking. If you get the engine serial number and call the factory, whatever it may be, and have them check for bulletins and service recalls. I did that with this truck back in February, and I was surprised with the service advisors. They didn't know anything about that. But it had that fuel injector pump ceramic piece that was a recall, and it was something like a recall with a bulletin. And so I mean, I remember the salesman telling me, well, you can still pick up the truck and go drive it anywhere else. And I told him that, no, I'm going to pick it up after you guys get done. And when turns out, they told me that once they did it, they ended up replacing the entire injector pump. And there was some debris that got down somehow in the bearings, and they had to put brand new bearings on that, which, you know, wow, I'm surprised they didn't go through the injectors. I thought that wasn't it, you know, well, they didn't go. They said, no, it was just on the oil part of the mechanism. So, but anyways, I'll take my comment off the air about the if you can, you know, Big Brother. So when we're going down the road, if I got a problem, I can call you. You can figure it out. Okay, thank you.
All right. Before you guys get to that, I'll jump in and talk about the emission engines and why we say they make the oil dirtier. Any internal combustion engine is going to make oil dirty. That's why we change it. You compare it to a closed system like a transmission or a differential, and we only change the oil at 500,000 miles, and we don't even really filter that oil. An engine is dirty. It's producing all kinds of combustion gases, and the temperatures are changing constantly, and condensation. We could have coolant getting in. We could have fuel getting in. There's tons of ways that an engine contaminates the oil. The reason the emission engines were worse is because we were bringing the dirtiest air, the exhaust gas, back into the combustion chamber. So now the combustion gases are much dirtier on that engine. That's the basic reason why these engines get the oil dirtier and why we've changed formulations to fight those things. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. John, Bruce, anything to add to that?
You nailed it there. Yeah, for sure. The exhaust gas is going into the intake charge. And keep in mind, you've got the intake valves pressurized now too, so any leakage that makes its way up around the valve guide is going to be carrying soot with it as well now, as well as any of the blow-by is going to have some extra unburnt soot, which doesn't get burned again, so it gets pushed back past that, so that helps to dirty the oil up even more. So as far as the live being able to watch, we obviously don't have that technology now. I know the trucking, you know, the manufacturers do. My friend that works for one of the large manufacturers has got the ability to see trucks that are out that have their, you know, their version of an OnStar system. Basically, he's got an app on his phone with a proprietary app that they've got, and he's able to see where there are trucks with check engine lights or in D rates, and different color codes come up for different things, and he could zoom right in and see if there's a truck with a problem and where the problem is, and then guide him to a dealership even. It's really, really interesting stuff. They've got a whole lot of technology in that direction. Cummins has got a new app as well that's similar. So that technology is there from the manufacturers. We personally don't have that. We've got the ability, if our someone's got one of our remote tuning kits and a nice Wi-Fi hotspot, we could watch what's going on, you know, via the internet in one of our computers if we take their computer over. But we don't have anything as high tech as he was talking about there just yet.
All right. Well, that'll do that. We're going to head off to South Carolina. Tad, welcome to the program.
Well, what's going on, gentlemen?
Hey, Tad, I just talked to you.
I know, but I called this first part of this call is for Bruce personally. I want to say... thank you ever so much, Bruce, for all your knowledge and the wonderful people you have working for you. And because of you three, and Kevin, I want you to, she sent you my fuel gauges, and it's been 30 days since I told you about them. But Bruce, I really mean it. You guys have processed my 10 mile per gallon truck, and it's a consistent deal now. And I just wanted to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for everything. All your knowledge you've given, I've applied every bit. I've changed everything like you told me to. And while you were talking on there, I was doing that experiment, dropping off. Everything's just running fine. And I wanted to just say personally, thank you, Bruce.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that. Are we on, Kevin?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, you're there.
You know, we try and we try hard, and we still get these people on social media that want to slander us, and all we do is we try to help and we try to improve. I mean, I think I had my mic turned down too low.
No, go ahead. And the thing about it, Bruce, Kevin, when you guys were talking about that, I'm going to give you an example. Remember, Kevin, the guy, he said, oh, I don't need, I get good freight and I get 5 miles a gallon. I was one of those guys. Now, I don't make the powerhouse money like the owner operators do, but the fuel thing was where I had to make my money, and I'm going to back up your numbers, Kevin. My first year before I started listening to you and modifications, I spent $110,000. My second year, when I got my scan gauge, started driving my truck correctly before any major modifications, I dropped down $51,000. Then I got my low blow and my singles, I went down to $41,000. And this year, I'm going to be down to $32,000.
That's fantastic. I mean, that's just consistently working on the bottom line. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with trying to improve revenue. When you own a business, you need to increase revenue, decrease expenses. That's the math. But a lot of times we don't have a direct impact on the revenue. The rates are decided by supply and demand mostly. Nothing wrong with working on it and trying to improve it. But I think there's a lot more benefit to spending time on expenses in a business for a couple reasons. One, you have more control over those. Fuel, certainly, you have a lot of control over. The other thing people don't realize, if I add a dollar to revenue or I deduct a dollar from my expenses, spend a dollar less, they're not equal. People forget that point. They think, oh, well, it's the same way. It's a dollar. Not even close. The dollar of revenue, you still have to take all of your expenses out of it. So you may increase revenue by a dollar, only actually improve your profit by 40 cents. But if I lower expenses by a dollar, that's a dollar on my bottom line. That's a dollar to the profit. And I think people forget that.
But I mean, and then even when I got Dorothy, I was so pleased that I got to be chosen, John, to do it and give me my numbers. And my numbers are all straight up. And if you would like to share those numbers with Bruce there, John, Kevin, I think it's phenomenal. I thought it was a fluke at first, but it's constant now.
Yeah, so Bruce, John, just to let you guys know, in fuel gauges for the last 30 days, covering a total of about 13,000 miles, overall fuel economy, 10.27.
Wow.
So that's not the, you know, one trip from, you know, Denver to Kansas City downhill with a tailwind. That's 30, you know, with all kinds of different conditions. And that's a true 30-day, 13,000-mile average of 10.27. That's pretty impressive. We're going to get to a break. We'll come right back and get to more of your calls and questions right after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Roth. Back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and John with me from Pittsburgh Power. We're down to the final segment, so we're going to get right back to your phone calls. We're off to Washington. Chad, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good. What can we help you with today?
Actually, I just bought a Cascadia 2012 with a DD15. And I'm actually on my first run. I'm in South Carolina now. And I've been listening to you guys quite a bit, and I'm really interested in that soot separator just because I think it would be good for the truck. And I wanted to find out, are they only doing that in Pittsburgh, or are they selling those things to their satellite places
for right
and letting
now.
Them put them on? Or?
For right now, they're still pretty much custom built. We've got a subcontractor who will be building them for us in the very near future. It's someone that we use for some of our other products. So we've got history with them, and they're excited about the project, and that's coming along. The tricky thing right now is I am hand fabricating all the kits. Your DD15, I should have a kit ready for here in a week or two, so I can mail it to you. And you can put it on yourself. It's not that difficult. But that's going to be probably a week or two out. I've got one coming in tomorrow to do that with. Tad, the fellow who just called in, he's our first one on a DD15, so it's not a very difficult installation. There are two different versions that I have to build. There's a flange where it goes into the engine that's different between years, so I have to figure out which one a 2012 is for you. And we could go from there. So eventually it'll be a full kit. We'll just be able to ship out to you, and you could have your favorite shop put on. But for right now, we're still in development, and we're still building installation kits to simplify that process.
Okay. I wish you guys, there's a bunch of different things, that upgrades that I could do to my truck, and I wish you guys had a list of all the different, you know, the tune, the soot separator, and everything on a list that showed a cost and maybe the, you know, what I could expect for fuel mileage out of it. So I kind of start at the bottom. Being that I'm new, I don't really have a whole lot of extra money, but, you know, I've been looking at the air tabs and the fleet air filter and, I mean, a lot of different things and kind of wanting to pick and choose what I get. Oh, let's do this $200 here or $500 here and work my way up to the tune, which I kind of had a question about that. There's two different tunes, I guess, one for the computer for horsepower and then one for the exhaust.
Chad, hold that thought before we get to the tune. I'll let those guys answer that. Let me answer the issue of the cost of upgrades and the return on investment, because I tried to do this several times. I tried to take all the things we found over the years that actually work. I've tried to take an average fuel economy savings and then the cost and then the return on investment. And it really got a little more complicated than it needed to be because of all the variables. What I found, because right. I get this question a lot, what I found a system that really works pretty well is, you know, all of the things we talk about on the show. You just named a bunch of them. That we've been talking about the same things for years. We just don't find that many new things. We every once in a while we do. But sit down and list them all out. Think of all the things you've heard us talking about, whether it's tires, air tabs, a muffler, whatever it might be that will work on your truck, obviously. And once you have everything on the list you can think of, call around, and Pittsburgh Power is a great place to start because they carry almost all of it, and get pricing on each one installed. That was another big variable, because I would say, well, here's what you can expect as a return to FAS, for example, and here's what the FAS cost. And then somebody would say, well, I was at a shop and they charged me 16 hours to install it. Well, now my numbers are way off. So it just wasn't working when I tried to put an absolute price, but you could do that. You could call around, get the pricing put the numbers down, pricing installed, and this actually works pretty well. Start from the cheapest and work your way up. You know, it's almost always the muffler. Yeah. If you have a truck that can use the Pittsburgh Power muffler, and just work your way up from there. And it really works out to be about the fastest return on investment, and it's pretty simple.
That and the full tilt exhaust manifold. The full tilt exhaust manifold is an instant return also.
Yeah. Yeah. But
That'll definitely go on my list.
I don't believe we have that for a DD15 yet. So
but for general trucks, it's a great place to start. That with that and the muffler.
Cool.
Yeah, so
I do have one more question. Go ahead.
The theory works. Yeah, no matter what truck you have, the theory works. You only list the things that would work on your truck, put a price on them, and then just start with the cheapest. And every time you have a little extra money, buy the next one and work your way through it.
Yeah, that's my plan. I've been having problems with, I've only been on this truck for about 5 days now. And in the past, I've experienced with Columbia and another Cascadia, like when you have the cruise control on and you shut the truck off and you try to start the truck back up and go and try to use the cruise control, it doesn't want to set, and I'd have to stop and shut the cruise control button off, shut the truck off, turn it back on, and then it would work. And the last couple days, the cruise control stopped working, and I'd stop twice yesterday to try and get it start working again, and three times today. And I was just wondering if you guys had some insight on what's going on.
Oh, that's interesting. And it's done this with two different trucks. You've had the same issue. If you leave it on, stop the truck, start over again, it doesn't work.
Yeah, about 10 years ago, I had a Cass or a Columbia that I was driving, and it would do it. At a Century, it never did it. The Columbia did it, and then I had a day cab that I worked local that did it. And then, like, yeah, just I always forget to shut it off, shut the cruise control off when I stop and shut the truck off. And I mean, that was my experience. And I don't know if it has something to do with the computer or what.
We don't have Ethan today, but I'm willing to bet that that is some sort of programming thing. I bet that's something that's a parameter that's switched on inside the program there from the factory that causes it to do that.
Yeah, I noticed I had the cruise control on and it started raining, and I turned my windshield wipers on and the cruise control shut off and it wouldn't allow me to turn it back on or anything until I shut the wipers off. And I don't know,
right. Maybe
that had something to do with it or what. I don't know. I would
almost guarantee that. Yeah, that's a parameter in there. You know, once it powered something up. Everything you do goes through a body control module, or the SAM module, they call it, and it's all computerized, and everything's connected through communication port to the truck's ECM as well. So it knows. So you'll have to, yes, I'm sure it's a setting that we may be able to adjust in the tuning to make it not do that anymore.
We're going to try to squeeze in one more before we've got to get out of here. Byron in New Mexico, go ahead.
Hey, yeah, I got a 97 C12, fixing to replace the seals on the fuel rail, the external fuel rail. Just wondering if there's any tricks to keeping those O-rings in place when I'm putting it back together so I'm not chasing them around.
I'd probably coat them with a thin film of grease.
What kind of grease?
Grease such as wheel bearing grease or chassis lube grease.
Oh, just some grease. Yeah, that's what I was thinking, is just put a little dab of grease on them to keep them in place, but
yeah,
didn't know if that would cause me problems or not, and so I thought I'd better call and ask the experts.
No, if any diesel fuel, if any got into the diesel fuel line, it would just flush through and burn.
Okay, good to know. And I got another recommendation, Kevin. I know a lot of times I hear people call in and they talk about how their engines just start heating up drastically when they hit a hill and they can't figure it out. I had that happen with my truck once. I had the engine redone and they installed the cam a tooth off. As soon as a guy found that and timed the cam right, my temperatures just went back to where they should be. So I know a lot of guys call in with that sometimes.
Got it. There's the music. That means I've got to get out of here. I want to thank Bruce and John from Pittsburgh Power. We'll do it again next week. Thanks for joining us. Check out the website. It's letstruck.com. Until next time, be safe, be profitable, fit and healthy. Always do the hard work. Master the journey. I'm Kevin Rodman. All right. Thanks, everybody. And we will see you tomorrow for Destination Health.